that's gone on? Do you do a message? Do I jump back into Revelation? But as I was there, I began a study that I'm going to share with you here this morning, or parts of it at least, because it was huge. And I thought, you know what? I don't know if this is the right time, but the more I looked at it, the more I thought it through, I thought this is the perfect time. Because we're in a position now in Revelation. We've already talked about this, all of this stuff leading up to chapter 6. And in chapter 6, things really start happening. And, you know, you've got the horsemen, you've got the seven seals, you've got the seven trumpets, you got all this really strange stuff that's coming out. And what I stated before, and this is the significance of this, is to remember that we have a tendency to look at the events and not at the one that's in control of the events. We forget about that because we live in a world where everything is science fiction, and we talk about these things, and so our focus ends up being on the seals or the trumpets or whatever, instead of the one that is administering these things. He's the one that's, these things are coming from him. They originate with him. They emanate from him. And so we've been talking a lot about this in this now chapter 4 and 5, and this vision of what John saw when he was called up there into the presence of the Lord. And I've shared many times with you that what he's seeing is the tabernacle, not the temple. The temple was the fixed thing that was based off of the tabernacle. But it was the tabernacle. That's what John is seeing. Now, he's seeing it in a different perspective than we would have seen it on the earth. You know, the tabernacle, for those of you that may not be sure, was sort of the mobile worship center for Israel. It was the tent that was set up with the fence that was around it. And when they were in their 40 years of wandering, the Lord's glory would rest, and they would set this thing up, and he would stay with them and minister to his people until he was time to go. And then the cloud would rise, what we call the Shekinah. We're going to be talking more about that. The Shekinah would rise, and he would move, and the people would pack everything up, and they would follow off. And this tabernacle was really significant because it is the place that God chose to reveal himself and to be amongst his people. That's where the word tabernacle comes from. We're going to talk about that, so I don't want to get into that right now. That this was the place where God would meet with his people. So this tabernacle becomes hugely important. And we said, as we've moved through this, that to try and look at the book of Revelation without understanding Exodus just doesn't make a lot of sense. And the more I see and the more I learn, I'm just stunned at how much is going back to the book of Exodus, which we're studying now on our Wednesday night study. And what God was doing there with his people and at Sinai, and that this concept of the tabernacle, that God is very clear, and keep this in mind because we're going to be talking more about this, that God told Moses to build this thing, to have this thing done exactly as the pattern that he had been shown. In other words, the pattern was going to come to him from heaven. That's why I've said before, I think this is what John is seeing, the actual tabernacle that the earthly tabernacle was patterned after. Now, the reason that's significant is because, as I stated before, everything that's going to take place, seals, all of that stuff, is all going to originate from where God dwells. And we've seen now he dwells on the throne. He's surrounded by the living creatures, the four living creatures, remember? And there's the elders that are around them. There's this host of angels, and there's all these incredible things that are going on. But it's all about that throne room. And we talked about how when you look at this, you're seeing a menorah, which is a huge part of the tabernacle, but unlike the menorah, which we just see a typical candlestick kind of a thing, a candelabra, I guess it would be. What it is, it's this unidimensional thing as it's described in the scripture. And so when you start to see this and start to understand this, all of a sudden what's happening in Revelation, all of the other stuff, the seals, trumpets, and all that, become kind of pale in significance to the view of the throne room. I know for years I taught the book of Revelation, as many have, and the focus always seems to be on chapter 6 to 19, the tribulation period. And there's some reason for that. But to me, it's chapter 1, which is the revelation of Jesus Christ, and chapters 4 and 5. That, to me, is the highlight of the book of Revelation. Because that, the focus is on the one that is so far removed from everything else. And the one that is, you know, has earned the right and deserves to be glorified, deserves to be honored and blessed and all of those things. So this concept of the tabernacle is going to be huge as we move forward, because I want you to see, I want you to understand that all that we're talking about is emanating, and once again, from this concept of tabernacle. So I want to take a little journey here. We're going to see some Hebrew. Don't get lost in this. I'm going to try to explain this. But I want you to see this. And I know you go, oh, here we go again. But I want you to understand the significance of this amazing language. It is unlike, it has no equal anywhere else in this world, period. Nothing even comes close. Because the language itself is so, oh my gosh, descriptive. It just explains so much. It brings so much light to everything that's sort of been hazy. It's just incredible. Now, you say, well, it's just a language. But it's the language that God communicated to his people. And remember that God created with the use of words. And God said, let there be, and there was. And it was good. So God uses these things. So to try to understand what we're, when we're looking at these things, is truly, truly incredible. So what I wanted to do, I saw this on the net, and I was fascinated by it. And I thought, as I was reading this and looking at this, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is what Revelation is talking about. Especially as we're going to jump into chapter 6, we're going to initiate. So what I want to do is take a little look at this word tabernacle. Okay? Now, we're going to talk about what it means, but I think everybody already knows. Now, the interesting thing about all of this is to remember that Paul teaches us in the New Testament that the tabernacle is who? It's each of us, isn't it? Unlike in those days. So what we're getting ready to talk about is available within each of us. That is incredible when you start thinking about it. Okay? So let's take a look at this. We're going to break this down. We're going to have some fun. I'm going to explain all this, so don't worry about it. If you want to write this stuff down, you can go online and find all this stuff. It's not like I'm, you know, a rocket scientist that could figure all this out. I just pulled a bunch of stuff together and then did my own search, and I was just. And Marie can tell you, I had pages of notes that I left at my mom's. I forgot to tell her this morning because my computer was giving me fits. Even the notes that I did last night when we got home and I studied last night, I left them sitting on the couch. So I'm, yeah, anyways. There's the word in Hebrew. That's what it looks like. Now that's modern Hebrew. I want you to keep that in mind. That's what you and I recognize today. That says Mishkan, okay? We're going to look at that. Remember now, you read from the left to the right in Hebrew. I'm sorry, right to left in Hebrew. I'm always trying to reverse it for you guys, so I'm not doing my arms backwards, and then I mess myself up here. So the word tabernacle is that Hebrew word Mishkan. Now, before we move any farther, remember, and I know some of you sat in on the Hebrew classes when we were doing an introduction to Hebrew, that what you need to understand, unlike any other language, and I mean, again, this is why it has no equal. Each of those, what we would call symbols, represents a letter, okay? So in other words, that first one on the left there, believe it or not, is an M. It's called Mem. That's how they would pronounce it. But did you catch that? It's not just an M, like it is in the English language, a single letter. It's a word, Mem. So it makes a word. So each letter in this language, and only this language, not only has a letter meaning, but it has a word meaning as well. So what happens is, and also it has a numerical value. I'm not even going to get into that, though you want to be boggled in your mind. You would not believe this, but I'm not going to get into all of that. That's some fun stuff if you want to do it, because this system of what they call gematria is just incredible. But you need to understand that. So when you're looking at this language, that is the word Mem, that first one, the one that looks like a W, is really the letter Shin. And once again, we would say S. But for them, it's not just a letter S, but it's also a word Shin. So it has not only the Shin in it, but it's also got another letter, which is the Nun, which is the N, Shin, right? And then the second letter there looks like a C, that is Kaf. Now this one's really cool. I want to try to get to that. And the last one there is what is called Nun. That is the letter Nun. Okay? So just wanting to explain to you by showing you this, make sure that you understand that these are not just letter values. Our A in the English language is just that. It's an A. Nothing else. Nothing else. It's an A. But for them, their A, the Aleph, is an A, but it's also a word, Aleph. Right? The Greek picked up from that with their Alpha, and we have Aleph Bet in the Hebrew, and Alpha Bet in the Greek, which is where we get alphabet from. That's where our word comes from. The two first letters of both the Hebrew and the Greek language. Hebrew being much older than the Greek, which our New Testament's written. So it's important to understand that. So, and that's again, that's how you would pronounce it. This is what they call a transliteration. That's what it looks like. Now that is written left to right like we would read it, but Mishkan, that's what that word is, okay? So let's take a look at this because this is amazing. Now, I mentioned to you that what you saw there was called modern Hebrew or biblical Hebrew, oftentimes it's called. But there's a language that goes back older than any other language. And guess what language it is? Hebrew. Imagine that. Now, we won't have time to develop this, but you can see how the change is going. But that, what you're looking at there, is what is called the pictograph, because not only do Hebrew words have a letter meaning and a word meaning, they also have a picture meaning, because that's how it was originally given. What you're looking at there with all that weird-looking stuff is how Noah would have written. It's how Abraham and Moses would have written. This was the words, the letter shapes that they would have used. And then it developed, and the Sumerians got it, and the Aram, Syria, they got it, and it became Aramaic, which what Jesus spoke when he was on earth. And we could just go on and on, and I don't want to bore you with all that. But I wanted you to see what it looks like in pictograph. That first one, again, on the left, that's the Mem. We're going to talk about what these pictures mean in just a minute. Sheen, notice what it looks like there. It looks like that. You're going to see that it's a little different than what you think, or at least I would assume. There's the Kaf, okay? We looked at that's the one that was like the C, so you can see how over time it had just rotated. And then there's the Nun, okay? And we're going to be talking about all these things, but that's what it looks like in its pictograph, okay? So when you come and you start to understand these things, understand what the picture is of, then you start to get what the meaning of the word is. Now remember, we're talking tabernacle here. This is the word tabernacle that we get. But the meaning of that is so much deeper and opens the book of Revelation like you cannot believe. Hopefully you'll see that today. Mem, that squiggly looking thing, that to them is water. That's how they depicted it. So the Mem represented water. And in their minds, having been people that was passed down the epic of the flood, as they would say, water then becomes chaotic. And that's why it looks like waves. But it also takes on the meaning of being different kinds of water. It can be like the sea, even at rest. It can be a lake or a stream, but it can also be rain, which comes down from heaven, because it's all related to water. In fact, it's related to another Hebrew word that's mayim, which is water. That's what it means. So that's the first letter. The second letter, sheen, okay, with that one I told you looks really weird, believe it or not, is teeth. And you're going, what the heck does that have to do? Let me remind you. The Hebrews, unlike you and I in America, you know, beautiful day. That is completely abstract. That's how we think. Beautiful can mean anything. For some, this weather is beautiful. Trust me, to my mom, this weather is not beautiful. So the definition of beautiful in that particular statement can mean anything. In the Hebrew mindset, they are not abstract in their thinking. They are concrete. They deal with everything as a reality, things that they can see, things that they can understand. So they would never say it's a beautiful day. If they liked the day because it was sunshine, they would say, the sun feels warm on my face. To them, that's what it would be. See, there's no questioning what that means. It means the one thing. The sun is warm on my face. Eternity, we've talked about this before. Define eternity. No time, it never ends, it goes on and on. You know, you could go on and on and on trying to figure all that. That's an abstract word. For the Jew, for the Hebrew, for especially for those in the Bible, eternity is the horizon. It's the horizon. Because no matter where you go, there's always the horizon. You can get to the horizon or think you got to it and it just goes on and on. So for them to describe it, to their word for eternity means horizon. So do you see the idea? So when they say teeth, you know, the first thing we think of is, you know, is teeth. But to them, the teeth were the first thing that you saw on a person. So it becomes, obviously, a signature. You know? We all know that, and that's why we take the time to get our teeth fixed and stuff, because, you know, that's why we do that. Because it's sort of the signature. Oh, I just didn't have time to do this. This is just incredible. I won't even do that for now, but it's awesome. But it also obviously means sharp. It's teeth. Teeth also are sharp. Why? Because they destroy and they consume. Right? So the word or the letter sheen means all of these things, and the picture of that is teeth. The kaf, and that's the one that looks like the W, is an open palm. That's what you were seeing there, this circle with these two lines. It's like somebody holding the palm. And it means to tame, to bend, or to press. That's what that letter means. Now, this is all going to make sense. I know right now, but just trust me, okay? So this palm thing is significant. So if they, when they, did you ever notice when we're praising and worship God, we hold our hands up? Did you ever notice that, right? Some people do that. But if you ever watch the Jews, when they do it, they hold their arms up, but they always put their palms out. Did you ever notice that? It's different. Nothing wrong with the way we do it. It's just how they do it. The reason is because of the kaf. Because it's the idea there's a lot of different meanings, but it means also to pass a blessing. So when they talk to a child and they say to someone, they put their palm like this because it's the concept of something being moved towards something else, towards another person. It's just incredible. Just wait. You ain't seen nothing yet. Okay? Then the nun, that thing that you saw, it was a seed. Their concept of the word nun means life. It means air. In fact, it's a key letter in the word son, because it's the son. It's the life of the father. It's the seed of the father. And we could just go on and on, but you get the idea. So it's the air to continue life. Now, what's really cool, Mishkan, okay, the root of the word is shachan. You can hear it in there. Mishkan, shachan, right? And that means to dwell. That's what the tabernacle was. It was the dwelling place of God amongst his people. Now, have you ever stopped to think about this? Why do that? I mean, you're God. You can communicate to them any way that you choose. I mean, why not send Michael and Gabriel to just sort of hang out with the tribes as they march through the wilderness and just sort of go along there and protect them and you know, sort of pass the word to the people that God wanted them to pass along. But that's not the God of the Bible. That's what makes him unique to all the other gods. His desire is to be amongst his people. It's why he created us in the beginning. And before there was rebellion and rejection of that law, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. God's intention all along was to be in fellowship, in an intimate relationship with man, his greatest of creation, because it's only man that has God's image and likeness, or bears God's image and likeness. That's why he did that. He had to give them freedom to choose, which is why they chose badly. Otherwise, that whole thing wouldn't have worked. You see how it goes? So the concept of shachan is to dwell. For us, we think, oh yeah, you just dwell and you're kind of hanging out. But to the Jew, to dwell with somebody means intimacy. These people aren't just around because they like being around you. There's an intimacy, there's a union that takes place. I mean, this is huge. This is what God chose to do with his people. And for you and I, since the Lord has come and left us his spirit, God has chosen to do that inside of you. We don't even have to go to a place to meet our God. They did. Because God's desire is to dwell with us. And the book of Revelation is not about the tribulation. It's not about the millennium. It's not about all. It's about God restoring what he had initially created so that we could be right back in union and intimate fellowship. That is what the entirety of the Bible is all about. That, in one word, that's the, it's redemption. And redemption to get us back into that relationship that we had. Read, when we get to chapter 22, you're going to see all of the stuff that happened in creation. There's a reversal of it in there. And this time, God is not going to allow anything to create any problems, to separate again. I mean, it's just absolutely phenomenal. So Shekhan, right? This word Shekhan means to dwell. That's part of Mishkan, okay? But now, in case you're wondering, Shekhan, does that sound like anything else to you? What about, remember we talked about the Shekhinah? The Shekhinah. We talk about this all the time. The Shekhinah glory of God, the presence of God. That he was amongst his people Israel. And he was a pillar of smoke in the daytime, and he was right there amongst them. And at night he was a pillar of fire. He was right there. That's called the Shekhinah glory, the presence of God in the midst of his. Isn't it interesting that the root of the word Mishkan has the same letters that Shekhinah has, because it's all interrelated. Now, remember back to John in heaven, and he's up there, and he's seeing the throne. Can you see? This is unbelievable. What John was experiencing firsthand was something that not Moses or anyone else had ever experienced in that presence. He was literally not just in the presence of the Shekhinah, but was right there with him. I mean, we could just go on and on. It's just absolutely staggering. So Shekhinah. Now, what's cool about these letters, and this is where we're getting into the pointing to the Revelation stuff. When you understand the Hebrew language, the letters, the letter meanings, and the words of the letters, the pictures, and all of that kind of stuff, and you look at those letters, and you take any of those letters of that particular word. One of the things about Hebrew is anything, any word in the Hebrew that contains any of those letters are all going to be related. Okay? We have a lot of words that have A in them that have no relationship whatsoever. But in Hebrew, if there's an Aleph, there's a connection. If there's a Mem, there's a connection. So what you do is you look at this and you look at then I just took the first letter. You could do this with every letter. We just obviously are not going to be able to do that. But if you take the first letter and you connect it to the rest of the letters, it paints a complete picture of the tabernacle and where we're going in the book of Revelation. Watch this. Mashal sounds very similar, but it's different. There are different spellings, a different pronouncement. And that means to govern, to correct, to bring order. What is going to come out of the tabernacle in heaven that God is about to do? What's the point of the seals and all of that stuff? To bring order, to correct the lies and the hatred that man has, not only towards other men, but towards God himself. You see, even that word, and it's related to the tabernacle and flows out of the tabernacle and gives us a much broader perspective of what's happening in the book of Revelation. If you put it with pat, the word, but there you see it again, the mem and the sheen, mishpat, it's a decision. Whoa, do you think that maybe coming out of the temple, the tabernacle, when the horsemen are sent out or the seals are broken or the trumpets are blown, do you think maybe there's a decision involved? Of course there is. You see the connection? It's all interconnected. I'm just going to go through this quickly. Another one. Now for the third letter. So that was the first two letters. Trust me, there's tons of these. There's no way we can go through all these. And it just gets cooler and cooler. But I'm trying to spare you. Macha. Now that's not the bird that flops around in Belize. Okay, macha. It means to be crushed, to press, or to squeeze. It's got the letter mem, and it's got the kaf. Remember the palm? Was to do what? Right? Was to blast, was to... But it was also to press, you see? So you see what's going on here? And again, what is coming out of the tabernacle? When the Lord sends the angels to blow the trumpets and to dump the vials and all of the stuff that's going on, you see, he's in control and he's crushing the arrogance of man and the arrogance of the one who thinks that he is going to be equal to God by establishing some throne or whatever. And God will just crush it. Remember back in Daniel and the statue and the rock was cut out and it hits the statue at the feet and the whole thing is crushed, it crumbles, it goes to ashes. I mean, this is what we're seeing unveiled, but it's all related, comes out of this simple word. Then mean, this is the last letter, is from a starting point, or from, it's the word they use for from, but it's also a starting point, the meme and the noon, the mem and the noon, sorry, from the starting point or origin. Again, do I really need to explain what's happening in Revelation chapter 6 after we understand chapter 4 and 5? The origin of all that's coming out has nothing to do with the horses. It has nothing to do with the seals of the trumpets or the vials. It has to do with the one who is has the authority, has the right to bring these things to pass. And this gets really cool. This is also, that's the same two words in menorah. The candlestick, that seven-branch candlestick. Where did the menorah set? In the tabernacle, yeah. And what did we say that John saw when he was in heaven? He was seeing a tabernacle. What else was he seeing? A multi-dimensional menorah. It's just no matter what angle or what word you use in this, it all starts with this tabernacle and everything flows from there because the one who dwells in the tabernacle is the one who sits on the throne and has earned the right to bring judgment on this earth. And it is Jesus that judges. The Father, in John 5, has granted all judgment to me, Jesus said. God is not going to judge anyone. Jesus is going to be the judge. Okay? So, trying to hurry here. Then the last one, you see it there as mem. I just wanted to do the mem. That, of course, is man. But if you add another noon to it, and the hey, which, by the way, is breath, and we can get into all of that. But anyway, you come up with the word manna. Now, think about this. The tabernacle was given by God with water, the concept of water in the sense of rain. It's coming down out of heaven. Where did manna come from? It came down out of heaven. Do you see, no matter what angle you look at this, it's all the same. It all ties back. But the point I'm trying to drive home is this is where we are in Revelation. And it breaks my heart that I did not understand these things in so many years of ministry. I mean, I did understand that there was a picture of the tabernacle, but I didn't understand the significance. And now as I study these things and look at these things and think of the book of Revelation as a whole, which everybody's panicked over for whatever reason, and you look at all of these things, all of a sudden understanding this, there's a clarity that comes to mind. And again, what I love about this, because me, like the rest of you, or at least some of you, was always focused on the seven, seven, seven. And you know, the seven seals, trumpets, vials. And that's they're obviously play a very important part. The number seven, completeness, is a very important number. But I was focused on those things instead of the one that controls those things. Because like you, my perspective seems to spend more of its time in the horizontal realm, thinking about things to come and thinking about what God is going to do and how this earth and all I've said before, all the bad people, you know, they're going to get theirs finally, you know, for treating us Christians bad and taking out of prayer out of school and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Stop. It's not about that. And all of a sudden what this has done, this new understanding, not well, whatever, has got me to start thinking of this from a different perspective. And the only thing it's doing is it's taking God and it's just putting him so far above the rest of it that it's just staggering. Now, I want to see where I'm going next because I can't remember. Okay, nope, I'm going to go back. Nope, we already went all through these, so I won't go through them again. Now, I said, this is the coolest thing. The word, there's a letter, kaf. Remember that thing that looks like a C? Remember, it's a letter. It's we see it as a C, but it's actually a K, kaf, obviously. But did you notice it's also a word, kaf? The second letter, which is the PH, I don't have the point here because my computer messed up on me. But anyway, the PH, so K-A-P-H, kaf, right, is the letter fe. Fe is mouth. If you look at a picture, the picture graph of it, it's the mouth. Okay? Now, and Remember in Kof, I said that, among other things, I don't even remember if I put this down there, but one of the other things was to cover, okay? So when you look at just the letter Kof and you understand what the word means, it's the palm covering the mouth. Now think about this, because we could go on and on, because what's being portrayed here is the Lord Jesus Christ, okay? By the way, that's the same letters in the word Kippur, atonement, to cover, okay? Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. But what it's speaking of is the one, and I'll just take it off the web because it was explained really well. Imagine if you're brought before a judge and there's the whole jury there, and what you've done is there, and everybody knows you are as guilty as can possibly be. You cannot deny these things are true. Everybody in the courtroom knows it. The jury knows it. Everybody does this, and they've decided and they've determined what they're going to do. And the picture of Kof is that the judge, the one that has the right to judge, before he brings judgment, covers his mouth. That, folks, is called mercy. It's called grace. It's called justification. It's called all of these other things. Now, our focus is on the tabernacle. Remember, in the tabernacle, there was two rooms. There was the holy place. The menorah was on one side. The table of showbread was on the other, representing 12 tribes of Israel. The altar of incense was before the big curtain. But there was another room, which was called the Holy of Holies. And in that place was called the Ark of the Covenant. Raiders of the Lost Ark is about this, trying to find this thing. And of course, if you find it, well, your face melts. But anyway, it's the Ark of the Covenant. Now, what we fail to understand is there's two aspects to this thing, because the Ark is a box. That's all it is. That's what the Ark is, okay? What's important, what's significant about this box is the thing that covers it, because that's called the mercy seat. Between the cherub. Does that sound familiar? Boy, I don't know about you, but my mind's going to Revelation 4 and 5 here real fast. And there it is, in the midst of this, in the ark, setting on the ark, is the mercy seat. And on the Day of Atonement, the only day that the high priest could enter into this particular room, judgment that could be passed is covered up. Now, stop and think about this. What was in the ark, the box? What was in the ark? Remember? Three things. Aaron's staff, remember, that budded, remember? Paid of a pot, or whatever you want to call it, of manna, right? And the Ten Commandments. Why are they in this ark? Did you ever wonder about that? What did they have in common? Do you know, have you ever stopped to think about the fact that the three things that are within the ark of the covenant, covered by the mercy seat, are three things that Israel failed? They failed or rejected God's leadership in Aaron, and that's why the rod budded and it was kept in the mercy seat. Their rejection is covered by mercy. Right? The other thing was the manna. God providing manna from heaven, which Jesus said, I am the manna. I'm the bread of life, right? And it was in there. What was the representation? What was it about? They rejected God's provision. Remember, they started complaining about it. Ah, we're sick of eating these crackers. We're eating whatever it turns out it was. We're sick of this. We don't want any more of this. So God says, all right, I'm going to send you quail, and you're going to eat it till it's coming out of your nose. God said that. I didn't. You want meat? You're going to get meat. Right? If it was my kids or my grandkids, it would be vegetables. You're going to eat these things until it's coming out of your nose. You see, they rejected God's authority in the rod of Aaron. They rejected God's provision in the manna. But then there was also the Ten Commandments. They rejected God's Ten Commandments. Remember when Moses came down carrying the Ten Commandments? What did he find them doing? The golden calf incident. So even the commandments. All these three things are in the Ark of the Covenant, covered out of sight by the mercy seat, as the Lord who dwells covers his mouth in judgment. That's unbelievable when you stop and you think about it. That's just, it's just amazing to me. Now, the other side of that, because these words also have, quote unquote, a negative meaning. From that same place where mercy is for those who recognize who their God is, judgment goes forth from there as well. Kaf, remember, also means to press. So you're seeing this whole picture, okay? This is what this tabernacle concept is all about. It's so much, there's so much more to this. It's absolutely staggering. But I hope what you understand now, and we're going to see, by the way, in the tabernacle of heaven, it's going to actually be identified as that in chapter 15 of Revelation. What we're going to see is under an altar in there are the souls of those whose lives were taken for the testimony of Jesus Christ. I mean, we could just go on and on and on, but you get the idea. So the point is, in the tabernacle, the whole entirety of the focus in the wilderness was the holy place where God dwelt in the midst of the Shekinah, and in the Shekinah, in the midst of the mercy seat. That's where God was in center. In Revelation, we see the same thing, God dwelling in the same place. And for those that are in relationship with Him, they're right around there and they're getting, all of these things are covered. But for those who reject, they're about to get the other side of the coin. So with that, when you move into now chapter 6, I hope that you have a different perspective of what's happening here with the seals. And all I wanted to do is just start it off, because I've already belabored the point here. In chapter 6 now, after the tabernacle, I love this, and we miss these things so often. Now. You know, do you understand the significance of that? John is saying, after these incredible things that I had seen, this tabernacle, the lion who's really a lamb, and he's been slain, but he's standing, so he's resurrected, and he's seeing all of this stuff now. You see? It's like now, it's like John is just going, oh my gosh, now I saw when the lamb opened one of the seals. Now this is significant, because the one that's in this tabernacle, identified as the lion, but also as a lamb, is the only one we've learned that has the authority to start breaking these things. So coming from the tabernacle now, whereas the blessings of chapter 4 and 5, for those that experience that, it's going to be reversed now. And what's coming out of the tabernacle and from the Ark of the Covenant, from all of these things, from the glory of God, is coming out, and it's in the hands of the lamb. Because all judgment has been given to me, Jesus said. So judgment begins. So I saw when the lamb opened one of the seals. I saw. Now notice, and I heard. So there's multiple things that are going on. Notice that it's the lamb that opens the seal, but watch. And I heard one of the four living creatures saying. So the lamb has the authority to break the seal, and it's the living creature, one of the four surrounding the throne. Remember, one had a head of a lion, one has a head of a man, one has a head of an ox, one has the head of an eagle. Remember, the gospels, the alignment of Israel around the tabernacle, it just keeps going. We could just keep going. And I heard one of the four living creatures saying with a voice like thunder. So this wasn't like, yo, John, come here. Even in heaven, the voice of this representative of who our God is thunders. John described it as thunder. People are terrified of thunder. A lot of people. I think it's really cool, personally. It always reminds me of verses like this. That's why come and see. So this tabernacle, which is such a picture of redemption and of atonement and of mercy and of grace as we've described it, is all of a sudden becoming the source, the origin, remember, of something that is quite opposite. And it's not coming from the hand of the lion, who of course is the same as the lamb. It's coming from the lamb. He's the one with the authority, and he opens this thing up. So what's about to come upon the earth is about to come now from the tabernacle in heaven. That's where it's coming from and its origin. So come and see. come and see. I want you to watch this. Pay attention to what's about to happen here. And we get focused on, oh, it's a white horse and he's got a bow and blah, blah, blah. And everybody's got their opinions about all of that. We get stuck on this stupid horse in verse 2 and the rider. And we miss verse 1, which is a continuation of 4 and 5. Do you see the point? Because again, it all originates with the tabernacle. So the question for you and I becomes this. What is your relationship to the tabernacle? Do you have the right, as we're told in the book of Hebrews, chapter 4? Do you have the right, because of your relationship with Him, to enter into the throne room and find grace in your time of need? Is that the relationship you got with Him? Or have you got the kind of relationship that you don't want to be standing in front of this thing when the tent flaps opened? I mean, that's a choice that we have to make, that we, the terms that we have to come to in our own lives. Because the tabernacle was a wonderful, wonderful place. It was so bloody, it's hard for us to imagine. Because it was pointing to the life, because remember, blood is life. It was pointing to the life of the one that would ultimately make it all right. The one who now has the only right in all of creation to open those seals. What's your relationship with Him? My dad is getting to see these things. And it's like, dang, he didn't even study this stuff, man. I mean, there's a part of me, of course, that misses Him, but it just is so, not jealous, but what's the word? Desirous? I don't know. To be where He is. With all of this in mind, the song that I could not get through yesterday was I Can Only Imagine. I can only imagine what it'll be like when my eyes will see you. I'm losing the words and stuff like that. And that thought of my dad, you know, will I stand before you, Jesus? Will I kneel? Will I sing hallelujah? Or will I even be able to speak? I just don't know. I don't know. You read this stuff and you understand this concept of the tabernacle, it's a wonder John could do anything. That he just wasn't flat immobilized. But the thought of my dad and those others of us who have gone before us, wow, wouldn't you like the Lord to let them come back and teach us the book of Revelation? Holy smokes, would that be awesome or what? You see, it all depends on where you stand in relation to not the tabernacle, but the one who dwells in the tabernacle. That's what each of us has to come to terms with. Because that line that my dad just crossed, and many of you have loved ones that have done so recently even, that's when it all changes. And it's going to come at any time. My dad was 80. He lived a good life. I had my dad with me for 60 years, man. And, you know, but there are others, oh, well, I'm going to get 60 years. I'm going to get 80 years. Really? Are you sure? Are you sure? Or we just saw that stuff on YouTube, that little baby that passed, and these kids that are going through cancer, and the 40-year-olds. What did Selena turn? Just, was it 40? 40? I think it was 40. I think I'd remember. Our loved Selena up there in Canada with the cancer. She's 40, man. She's not guaranteed any more years. We always tend to think that we've got all the time in the world and we can do whatever we want because eternity is out there. It's not out there. There's no guarantee that any of us are going to be alive in this life 5 minutes from now. None. Doesn't exist. So your relationship and where you stand in your perspective of the tabernacle and the one that dwells there is pretty significant. We need to come to terms with that. And if it's true that it all originates from them and this world has basically rejected Him, we've set up our own temples, we've set up our own tabernacles, we've set up our own presences where you know, we could go and find our own glory and all of this stuff, it ain't going to last. And yet those are the things that we put our time into. So think about that this week. The tabernacle, it's just incredible. I know you're saying, oh man, he already said a lot. But I'm telling you, have some fun. This is everywhere you can find this stuff. This ain't secret. This isn't for pastors only. Give me a break. Go in there and look this stuff up. You will be stunned at what this means. We just touched on this. This concept of tabernacle. Oh my gosh. And I just wanted to share that with you as we move into chapter 6. Because to me, that's the significance. Amen?